I'm Rick Ganley, NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. As Granite State teachers headed back to school recently, they received welcome news. The State Department of Education said it would seek a waiver for New Hampshire from the requirements of the federal No Child Left Behind Act. The law was promoted a decade ago by President Bush. It was a bipartisan effort lauded by Republicans and Democrats in Congress. But once it hit the state level, many school districts said complying with this law was going to be next to impossible. So when the Obama administration offered states the chance to seek waivers to it, many jumped at the chance. New Hampshire waited longer than most, but recently announced that it too would seek to opt out. However, a waiver doesn't mean districts are off the hook. In a way, they're trading one system of accountability for another. And there are supporters of NCLB who say this law did have benefits. It pulled back the curtain on how all schools were meeting the needs of all students, a focus they say that must continue no matter what law is or is not in place. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire leaves behind, No Child Left Behind. We begin our coverage with Sam Evans-Brown. He's NHPR's education reporter, and he's been following this waiver story. And Sam, thanks for your time.
Anytime.
Many states, as you know, Sam, more than 30 at last count, have asked the federal government for waivers. Why do so many states, including New Hampshire, want to be freed from the requirements of No Child Left Behind?
Well, I think, Laura, there was this perception that No Child Left Behind was really all stick and no carrot. You know, the schools had to their performance was judged on their results on standardized testing. And so teachers really had to teach to the test, led to sort of a narrowing of the education experience. And a lot of schools were labeled perhaps unfairly as failing that felt that that wasn't really the case.
And from what I understand, Sam, if this law had stayed in place, 80% of New Hampshire schools would have been considered failing, a pretty large number.
Right. And what was going on is schools had to meet something called adequate yearly progress. They had to show that each year they were improving their test scores by whatever amount that was considered to be proper. And by 2014, 100% of students were supposed to be performing at grade level, which a lot of people say was really unrealistic.
Yeah, in 2014, that's partly why states are rushing to seek these waivers, right, Sam? Because 2014 is that deadline. It's coming up.
Yep, and it was quite clear that a lot of schools, you know, as you say, 80% were labeled as failing. A lot of schools were not going to make the deadline.
Well, New Hampshire's waiver request isn't approved yet, but most states that have asked for them have received them, with a couple exceptions. So let's just assume for a minute, if we could, Sam, that New Hampshire does get this waiver. What does that mean for our schools, our teachers, and especially our students?
Well, there's a lot of things that are coming through as part of this waiver. A lot of them, though, were going to happen anyway. And what's coming down, there's a couple things that people should probably hear about, because they're going to be hearing these words a lot from their teachers, from their kids in the coming years. So to start, there's something called the Common Core State Standards that's part of the waiver application, and that's this new set of curriculum, basically it's when kids are going to be learning what and what they're going to be required to know for the new standardized test. That's coming down. And there's something called the Smarter Balance Test that's going to be the new standardized test for determining how schools are performing. And so parents are going to be hearing a lot about that. Those are probably the biggest changes that are coming our way. It is worth noting, though, that New Hampshire signed on to these before the waiver process began. And really, it was just a way for us to check off the squares in the waiver application of what the feds were looking for from us.
And any parent of a public school student out there knows what I'm going to ask you about next. You said the Smarter Balance Test. Does that replace the famous NECAPS, the New England Common Assessment Program?
Now, the NECAPS won't go away entirely. We will still be, as teachers say, we will still be kneecapping for certain subjects. But the Smarter Balance will replace the NECAP for the most important reading and math subject areas. The Smarter Balance Test is a computer-based test. It supposedly is going to be more open-ended. It won't be so many multiple-choice questions. There are some concerns about it. I was talking to a principal just yesterday who was saying he's not sure how schools with not many computers are going to be able to administer this test. Everyone's supposed to be taking it at the same time on computers. So there are a lot of questions to be answered still, but it's not going to be until the spring of 2015 that the first Smarter Balance test is going to be administered. So there's time to sort of work those questions out.
Well, Sam, you mentioned two terms that we're going to be hearing a lot about: Common Core Curriculum, Smarter Balance test. As we go forward, there's probably other terminology, sounds like jargon to those of us outside the system. What are some of the other words that we should be looking out for, Sam?
Well, I'm sure that parents have seen some of these already. Formative and summative tests. So a formative test is an assessment that a teacher will give to a student in their day-to-day work so that they can just sort of get an idea of how kids are doing and they can gear their teaching to sort of plug those holes. A summative is where your grade comes from. Formatives are more like, you know, homework, classwork, and a summative is the big test that you're working towards. That's something that people will be hearing a lot. That's not necessarily related to the waiver, but certainly it's a new buzzword in education. Something that is related to the waiver, there's student learning objectives and student growth percentiles. Now, part of the waiver application is this idea that we should be linking teacher evaluations to student performance. So student learning objectives are the goals that teachers are setting for their students to where they should be in learning. And student growth percentiles, that's saying how close did you get to making it to those goals. And those, once they're calculated, can be used to sort of grade the teacher. And these are very controversial. They are, linking teacher performance to evaluations is a sticking point in the Chicago strikes right now. So you might be hearing a lot about this in the coming years.
Okay, Sam, thanks a lot. Lots for you to tangle through in the coming weeks. Thanks for being with us.
Not at all.
That's Sam Evans-Brown. Again, he's NHPR's education reporter. And today on The Exchange, we are looking at No Child Left Behind once again and what might replace it. Let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. How do you feel about the state getting a waiver from this law? How have you seen No Child Left Behind affecting your local schools, for better or for worse, in your opinion? And if you're involved in public education as a teacher or an administrator, what do you think is the best way to ensure school and teacher accountability? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests for the hour. With me in studio, Paul Leather, Deputy Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Education. Paul, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
Also with us, Scott McGilvray, President of the National Education Association of New Hampshire, the Teachers Union. Scott, thank you. Also welcome.
Thank you for having me in.
And joining us from Dartmouth College is Rebecca Holcomb. She's Director of Teacher Education at Dartmouth College. She also teaches a course in education politics and policy. And Rebecca, good to have you too.
It's great to be here.
Well, and Rebecca, to you first, you know, let's just step back before we focus in on what this waiver might mean for all of us in New Hampshire. What was the goal of No Child Left Behind? Because at the time, I remember the debate in Congress, many people said these are good, laudable goals that are going to help our students achieve.
Well, I think it's important to remember that No Child Left Behind was in part a child of the standards-based movement, which was an effort both at the national and the state level to really define clearly what it was we wanted students to know and be able to do. And the logic behind that was if you can't be really clear about what your learning outcomes are for students, it's actually very hard to get them there. And that's admirable. And then from that, once you're clear about what your goals are, the obvious next question is, how do you know if students are learning what we're trying to teach them? And are the opportunities to learn sort of spread evenly across different populations, including some that are historically underserved in our country? And that's where really No Child Left Behind came into play. And one of the big contributions of No Child Left Behind was making student gains or in student scores transparent so that parents could look at for their school how the students in the school were doing on average, but more particularly how they were doing within certain subgroups. Because what quickly became clear is that some students' schools might appear very successful based on their average scores, but when you started to break it down across different populations within the school, some schools were not effective with different groups, for example, students with disabilities or students from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. And obviously, this is a critical issue of social justice, but also in terms of our effectiveness. The average scores can mask the ineffectiveness of the school with respect to certain students. So I think a real contribution of No Child Left Behind was really changing the mindset of schools towards one in which we feel responsible for the performance of all students.
Well, and so, Rebecca, to you again, and then I'll get our other guests involved as well. What happened? I mean, once this got down to the state level, local educators, you know, not just teachers, superintendents, school board chairs, principals, people really seem to dislike this law.
Well, I think that the answer to that is one that's going to take the rest of this conversation today because it's very complicated, honestly.
But just broadly, like Sam Evans Brown, for example, said it was all carrot and no stick, you know?
Well, it is. And I think there are two ways to improve schools, and accountability is the one in the cheap, but it's also the one that's the least effective. I think it it doesn't deal with creating the or improving the capacity of schools to actually generate the kinds of improvements in learning that we really want to achieve. And you can hold people accountable, and when you attach high stakes to the consequences of these scores and these tests, you create and set in play a whole bunch of incentives that paradoxically can actually undermine your goals. Well, and I think that's what happened in the case of No Child Left Behind.
And Paul Leather, Paul Leather, I want to go to you too. Just real quickly, what happened? I mean, No Child Left Behind gets passed. Congress says it's great, or at least a number of members from both parties, and then it hits the states, and the states say, uh-uh.
Well, I think that the basic theory of action that was involved with No Child Left Behind was laudable. Many folks agreed with it. But then as it was put into play, there was this realization that all of the focus was on the tests and not about lifting curriculum and instruction. And so teachers were left out there being held accountable to these tests that in some cases didn't have a whole lot to do with what they were teaching in the classroom. And so there was a feeling like there was a mismatch between what teachers were doing and what was expected of them and what the law was requiring.
All right. And, of course, we've got Scott McGillivray with us, too, with the National Education Association, the Teachers Union. So, Scott, we'll turn to you after a short break. We'll take your calls, too, at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and more on leaving the No Child Left Behind law on the exchange on NHPR, and then at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, an update on the killing of the U.S. diplomat in Benghazi and the attack in Cairo. We're now in the final push of the governor's race, as well as the races for New Hampshire's two congressional seats. Tune into NHPR next week to hear live debates with the candidates in those races. Hear them on the exchange at 9 a.m. and again at 8 p.m., and you can track all our election coverage at nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Core Gastroenterology of Exeter, offering comprehensive care in the evaluation and treatment of gastrointestinal disorders. CorePhysicians.org, the art of wellness. And from Integrated Solar, providing solar electricity, geothermal, and solar hot water solutions with expertise in engineering, construction, and finance since 1975. ISASolar.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, 10 years after the federal No Child Left Behind education reform law, changes are in store for New Hampshire schools if it gets a waiver that it has now requested from the federal government. We invite you to join us with your questions and comments. If you're involved in public education in New Hampshire, what do you think is the best way to ensure school and teacher accountability? How have you seen No Child Left Behind affecting your local schools? Has it had a positive impact or a negative one, in your opinion? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And just before the break, Scott McGillivray, we were talking about how the states dealt with No Child Left Behind. Again, people in Congress seemed to like it, but once it hit the state level, a lot of folks in education said, no, this is not working for us. How did teachers feel about this?
Well, I think teachers really looked at NZLB as really lacking a rational system of accountability. for student performance and teacher performance. I think it really set up a system of unrealistic goals that in the end districts would be unable to meet. We kind of rejected it. It's a deficit model, kind of a shaming and by naming. And that really isn't a model of trying to improve and motivate school districts and schools and teachers. The shaming by naming, of labeling them, failures.
And yet, one of the things, and Rebecca talked about this before the break, one of the things that some people liked about No Child Left Behind was you could see how your school was doing. You could look it up, find the numbers, and see how your own child and his or her own school was doing. So people liked that.
Well, on one test on one day, that's what it was measuring. Not, we're in school 180 days, over 1,000 hours. So one little snippet out of one day in a kid's life now labels that child, that teacher in that school. And that's really an unfair system of accountability.
So this gets us into then the waiver and your hopes that this will perhaps be a better system. What do you think, Rebecca, as we move towards this possible waiver coming from No Child Left Behind? Again, most states that have asked for one have received it. What's sort of the ideal, what are some of the ideal goals that you hope the waiver accomplishes? How do you hope this will be better?
Well, as Scott mentioned, I think one of the weaknesses of the previous system was its focus. It really was a deficit focus, and it also obscured the fact that sometimes the very low-performing schools were actually doing very, very good work. It's just that their students may have been starting from such a low performance level that it was hard to see that in the aggregate scores. And I think that the shift in the state towards this positive intent, towards the focus on looking at gains and looking at teacher efficacy and trying to improve the capacity of teachers in individual schools to support learning, is really positive. I think the million-dollar question is what that's going to look like in practice. I think we're I know that part of the new plan will include a focus on student learning measures. I think the question again will be, when we do look at longitudinal data, when we do look at scores on the Smarter Balanced test, it's not whether we use those measures of student learning, it's how we use them. And if we simply replace the old model with high stakes accountability for teachers based on scores on the Smarter Balanced test, I think we're going to end up really in a similar situation to where we are now.
There is a little more than a dozen states who have decided not to seek this waiver. And one reason, Paul Leather, is they do feel like they're trading one system of accountability for another. What does the waiver that New Hampshire has requested, your department, what does it say we will do? It doesn't say, please get us off the hook and we'll just go do what we want.
Right, Laura. We took a very close look at it. As you probably are aware, this is the third round of submissions, and New Hampshire waited until the third round because we didn't feel, when we first took a look at this opportunity, that it really was going to fit New Hampshire. There are some fairly specific requirements around teacher-leader effectiveness, around adopting college and career-ready standards and putting an assessment system that will address those standards and addressing the needs of struggling schools very directly. We actually have no problem with that. We just want to do it in a way that's true to New Hampshire's character. New Hampshire is uniquely locally controlled, and we don't really believe that a system where it's one size fits all, whether it's coming out of Washington or coming out of Concord, is the way New Hampshire would like to run its accountability system for education. So what we've constructed is a way to do this New Hampshire's way. And we met with Secretary Arne Duncan and talked to him about this, and he encouraged us to go forward with our approach. And so that's why we feel pretty confident that this is going to be a system that's not going to just be No Child Left Behind 2.0. It's going to be a new kind of system that will really recognize the efforts of our teachers to do the best job that they can and recognize how they're working to move all of their students to be college and career ready. So we look to support schools and districts and educators as they do that, and we're looking at ways in which we're going to network educators together, both online and through face-to-face learning so that they can learn more about this system and more about the model and really help their students to do the best they can do.
What do teachers hope, Scott, comes out of this waiver process? Certainly keeping an eye on performance, but making sure it's done in a better way.
Certainly. I think the waiver will support reforms, the reforms that are going to really increase the quality of instruction in our classrooms, improve student achievement. I think the waiver sets up a balanced system of accountability, where right now it's, you know, a test on one day. It's setting goals of preparing our students to enter into higher education, where we don't have that goal right now. Setting up a system of really ambitious objectives to close the achievement gap among our students. And as Paul alluded to, setting up a real good system, solid system of supports, not only for the schools, but also our educators in the classrooms. And really setting up and implementing a teacher effectiveness, evaluating our teachers, but looking at the evaluation as a holistic approach rather than a one-day snippet in the life of a student and a teacher.
Lots to follow up on there, but I do want to go to our listeners as well. So let's turn to them now. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And up first is Chris in Manchester. Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Thanks for having me, Laura. I've, as a parent of two school-age children and having had a vested interest in education for a number of years, it seems to me that the measures for accountability have been very narrow. And everyone, your guests have mentioned this a number of times, you know, teaching to the test and whatnot. And it would appear to me that a more holistic approach that maybe addresses individual student needs might be considered. And I'm thinking along the lines of parent and student feedback in a measurable way as opposed to anecdotally for teachers and administrators, whether it's in the form of a survey and whatnot. I know with my kids, we meet with the teachers twice a semester, at the beginning of the semester to find out what the kids' goals are, and at the end of the semester to find out whether or not they met them. And usually they do, which is great, but there's no formal capture of that data. So if maybe some sort of a form or a format were in place where you could capture that feedback and from families and students, then you could quantitatively capture that and put that into the mix with regard to how a teacher's relating to a particular student, and then you measure it overall how they relate to their class.
Chris, thanks a lot for calling in. Rebecca, what do you think?
I think you're caller just asked a very, very good question, actually. It's interesting. I do some work with the Los Angeles Public Schools, or I've done some work there. And what was interesting in some recent work they did there is that the measure that best predicted improvements in student learning was actually student survey responses or student evaluations of teachers.
And really? Wait, student evaluations of teachers?
That students, because they see the teachers every day and that their measure of the teacher's performance is really based on that extended contact, the student evaluations were very effective at predicting teacher effectiveness. And this is in a system where they're also using a very comprehensive and thorough teacher evaluation model, or at least phasing one in, and also using value-added measures of student performance to evaluate teachers.
No one would say, you know, only students' opinions should be included, but I'm interested in that and a little skeptical, Rebecca. I mean, you know how kids are. I mean, they don't like their teacher because he or she is a really tough, good teacher who's making them work hard.
You know, I think kids are smart and kids appreciate being challenged. And I think, you know, I think of your own children at home, I'm sure they whine about you sometimes. But I think at the end of the day that they know that you love them and that you're there to push them. And I think kids are the same way about teachers. If they feel that a teacher is warm and or is very demanding, but they know it's coming from a place where they really value the commitment of the teacher to their own welfare, I think kids reflect that in their observations. Again, I'm not saying that we should judge teachers and decide to give them jobs or not give them jobs based on what students say.
No.
But I think it's a valid, you know, place to start looking for information.
What do you think about this, Scott?
Well, having been in the classroom for 24 years, I always used student evaluations. At the end of every semester, we sat down, we had good conversations, and then gave them a written assessment. And like any assessment, you know, there are some students that may not appreciate, you know, or had troubles. But I certainly took that in and used that in the development of my next course. You know, I would say, you know, our members look forward to being part of this. This is a partnership in educating a student, as well as it's a partnership with schools, community leaders, about how we can, in the end, improve student learning and bring our students to a point where every kid graduating from high school now is prepared to go on to higher education.
Or college or career ready, as the Obama administration has been saying. Let's take another call. This is Bill in Lyme. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Good to be here. Thank you for taking the call. I'm leery of any kind of national assessment. I'm leery of any kind of national assessment because states vary from place to place, and even within the state there is variety. If you have a national assessment and it is good, that's fine. If it is bad, then we all go down. I like the competitive nature of can one state produce something that is better and be attracted to other states to be picked up. In general, however, I think that each school ought to have a report card that you talk with the staff, you talk with the parents, your clientele who are paying your bills, and you come up with something that you agree upon. And I think that something that you agree upon is not necessarily the rote learning of materials. It's perfectly all right to teach to the test if the test is a good one. If you're talking about science, then it seems to me that lab science is an important part of the course. Therefore, the assessment ought to have lab work associated with it. I teach in social studies. Research is an important part. Therefore, the final assessment should have something having to deal with the student's ability to do research. If you're talking about world languages, then you're talking about the ability to converse, and there ought to be something besides sitting at a desk writing down multiple choice answers. You ought to be able to go out in a community and converse in world languages.
You know, Bill, you're raising a couple points that I want to follow up on, so thank you. And the first one to you, Paul Leather, because it relates to something you said earlier. When New Hampshire applied for this waiver, and you said it kind of, the state kind of waited for a while because you wanted to make sure the requirements of this new waiver would work for New Hampshire, in your words. And here's our caller, Bill, saying he's leery of national assessments. What do you think about that, leery of national assessments and needing to find a program that works for New Hampshire?
Well, I think Bill makes some good points, and I think he really evidences what we see around New Hampshire, that folks want to see education being close to their community and really evaluated within their community. We see that the school report card, for example, that's something that people are asking for, and that will be a feature of this system. I would also mention that we're also including performance assessments as part of this effort, where teachers will be working with students to assess complex performance tasks on the part of students through the year.
So the measurements and report cards haven't gone away, Paul.
They've not gone away, but what they've done is they're going to be much closer to the classroom, and they're going to be much closer to what students are expected to be able to do and to be able to demonstrate over time. Because we believe that college and career readiness is not just whether you can fill in a bubble test on one day out of the year. It's how can you take learning and demonstrate that learning over time in a variety of circumstances. And that's what performance assessment will allow us to do.
And that was the big complaint about No Child Left Behind. And Scott mentioned this earlier, too. No Child Left Behind pretty much measured how somebody was doing on a particular day. Here's another question that comes out of Bill's call. And Bill, thanks a lot. Rebecca, to you, he also mentioned several other subjects, science, social studies, world languages. One often faulted aspect of No Child Left Behind was its, what some called, overemphasis on math and reading at the expense of other subjects, like the ones that Bill mentions. How might the waiver address this deficit, if at all? Maybe that's too much to take into account. What do you think?
Well, I think the waiver will address these depending on, I mean, I think there's a theory of action. The million-dollar question will still be what this looks like on the ground when it's in place. Ideally, this will give New Hampshire the capacity to sort of broaden the lens of what it's looking for. We've been talking an awful lot about testing, But I just want to go back to something someone said early on, which is that there's a lot of non-cognitive skills that are really, really important and I think have been pushed off the table. Things like academic perseverance, academic mindset. You know, the Dartmouth program here is really focused on mind, brain, and education and what we know about how students learn. Whether or not a student goes into class thinking that intelligence is fixed or it's something which is, I think, how we've traditionally viewed it, but now modern research is showing that actually it's incremental, that tested IQ can change over a period of years based on instructional interventions. These are the kinds of things that we need to be looking at that aren't captured by tests. Things like grit, how do you persevere on a task? What are the kinds of social skills that enable students to succeed in careers and in college? These are things that we know from numerous studies have a huge impact on student life outcomes, even if they aren't necessarily captured in their test scores. So one hope I have is that the waiver will give us the flexibility to start to cultivate and develop some of those other skills that we know really drive life outcomes, if not test scores. You know, I'm listening to the discussion of the performance-based assessments. At the end of the day, they're still tests. Performance assessments, because of the way they're designed, will actually make it even more difficult to use those tests for statewide evaluation of teachers or comparisons of effectiveness. And so I think we have to ask ourselves when we look at these tests, what is it we actually want them to do, and make sure that what we want these tests to tell us about learning is actually in line with what they can tell us about learning.
Paul, you wanted to jump in there. Go ahead.
Well, I certainly appreciate Rebecca's concerns. I think if you look at the waiver application carefully, I think you will see that we've addressed each of those concerns very directly. We've actually adopted a definition of college and career readiness that essentially says that what's in the standards for English language arts and math is absolutely essential, but it is not sufficient.
So you've got social studies, civics, languages,
yes,
history.
Yes, and also that we're looking at the skills that students need to have to really adapt and use those the knowledge that they gain, and also the kinds of dispositions that students need to be able to demonstrate when they go to college or when they enter a career, which some of them are non-cognitive. Some of them really relate to how do they deal with people.
How do you measure that, though? Perseverance and grit. I mean, how do you measure that, Paul?
Well, I think that when a student is involved in a complex performance task really over an extended period of time, then they can really show what they're able to do in non-academic settings.
All right. Well, lots more to talk about after a short break, and we'll take your calls. You can join us on The Exchange at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Stay with us.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Gripponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Gripponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at gripponi.com. And Upton and Hatfield, representing individuals, municipalities, businesses, and school districts in New Hampshire, with offices in Concord, Hillsborough, Portsmouth, and North Conway. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear from people who really make you think, like astrophysicist Brian Greene explaining the scientific theory that our universe is just one of many.
And the image that I like to have in mind is, imagine that our universe is like one slice of bread in a much grander cosmic loaf, with the other slices of bread being other universes.
No subject is too big for Fresh Air. Join us. Weekdays at 3 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow in The Exchange, New Hampshire's state campaign finance laws are under scrutiny in light of the U.S. Supreme Court's Citizens United case. Email us your questions before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, how public education in New Hampshire may change if the state is granted a waiver to the federal No Child Left Behind law. Join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477. Over the 10 years that No Child Left Behind has been in place, how have you seen it affect your local public schools? How do you feel about the state getting a waiver from this law? And if you're involved in public education, what other way, if not No Child Left Behind, do you think is the best way to ensure school and teacher accountability? You can post a comment on our Facebook page. You can join us by email, exchange@nhpr.org, or call 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go right back to our listeners. And Warren's waiting in Wolfboro. Hi, Warren, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, Laura. I appreciate it. I enjoy your show very much. I would like to just make one point I don't think any of the guests have made yet, and that is the reason for and one of the benefits for the No Child Left Behind bill, and that was this, that there, I think, was an acknowledgement that the public school education was not what it could be, and it's not to blame the educators or the teachers any more than the parents or the lack of parenting. But the reason for it, I believe, was that they made public the problem with the system, and in so doing, they stressed the fact that teaching should be about reading, writing, and arithmetic, not social justice. One of your guests also mentioned shaming by blaming, and that was the same idea, I think, where they stopped printing grades and putting them up in the class outside the hallways of the classroom because they didn't want the students who did not succeed to be hurt by it. Here in Wolfboro, years ago, they knocked off the valedictorian, salutatorian, and so forth from the classes because they didn't want to offend those who were not ranking that high. And I think that was one of the reasons for the bill and one of the good things that came out of it, that less social justice being taught and more reading, writing, and arithmetic.
So,
and
Warren, a note of appreciation for No Child Left Behind, the fact that it established standards and highlighted the fact when schools weren't meeting those standards.
That is correct, and that, I think, is one of the reasons, not the only reason, certainly, holding teachers accountable for students that come from parentless homes or one-parent homes or things like that is not good. I'm the father, the husband, and the grandfather of teachers, one of whom was a principal in Manhattan for 10 years. You can't blame the teachers. But the fact of the matter is that the education system, you wanted to set standards. And when the state started to fumble and stumble with the standards, and when certain parents whined and cried that they could no longer, the kids weren't being taught and so on and so forth, I think that is one of the reasons. If New Hampshire supplements the No Child Left Behind with another accountable system where everyone involved in the system is held accountable, and I recognize you can't hold parents accountable in any public forum, I think that would be something that would well serve the public and the teachers themselves.
Well, Warren,
thanks.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Great to hear from you. Lots of points to follow up on. I think I want to hear from all of you on this. And Scott, I'll go to you first. Again, a shout out for No Child Left Behind. It set standards and it held people's feet to the fire.
Certainly, it did set standards. But years later, you know, NCLB, it's outdated. And no reauthorization seems to be coming out of Congress.
Which, by the way, is the reason the Obama administration is giving states waiver opportunities, because Congress can't get this done.
Right. It can't get out of its way. And they keep bringing it up, but it's a political hot button topic. So I think this waiver really takes what was standards that we had. But now we bring it up to date, to New Hampshire's way. Allow our local communities to take this and run with it as well.
What does that mean specifically, though, and how do you address Warren's concern that if you get rid of this, how are you making sure that schools and teachers are still doing what we need them to do?
We're not getting rid of standards. And in fact, the State Department of Education has set up a system of competency-based learning in the schools where we do, as they alluded to earlier, setting up formative and summative assessments of students. So, in fact, we're really setting up more standards and accountability, but bringing it up to modern-day life. You know, 20 years ago, maybe setting a goal of having every child go to college wasn't realistic. It's a realistic goal that we need to set forward for our students in our schools.
Rebecca Holcomb, I want to bring you into this, too. Go ahead. Your thoughts on Warren's comments. And thanks a lot, Warren.
Well, I'm actually the person, I think, who mentioned social justice, but I actually think I'm with Warren on this one, in that for me, social justice is actually making sure that every child, whether they come from a working class family, whether they come from a family where the parents are professors, every child is expected to learn and challenged to learn and given powerful learning opportunities so that they end up with a skill set and a set of understandings they can use to have whatever kind of life they want to live and contribute productively in their community. I think the bigger issue is that No Child Left Behind doesn't work. And let me pick on a different state for a minute. If you look at New York and you compare the gains on the New York State test to the gains on the National Assessment of Educational Progress, what you see is tremendous gains on the state test. Now, let's just look at eighth grade math, for example. If kids really know more math in eighth grade, which is what you'd expect given the New York State scores, you would expect them to do better on the National Assessment of Educational Progress on the eighth grade math test. But what you're not seeing is commensurate gains. That tells you that even though the gains are on those tests, that they're somehow not capturing real learning that's transferable or generalizable, I think is the word that Paul Leather was using. At the end of the day, what matters is, are the kids actually learning more that they can then turn around and apply in college and careers in ways that make them more effective? And the current testing regime doesn't work. And I don't want to bore people with the technical dimensions of test design, but if tests are very predictable and in terms of what they actually teach and the way they test it is very predictable, what you rapidly see is people teaching in ways that replicate the particular way concepts are represented on tests. And kids are taught procedures to do well on tests, but that learning as captured on the test is specific to the test. And it doesn't prepare them for college. It doesn't prepare them for being effective in their career. And to me, that is a social justice issue.
So what does, and real briefly, Rebecca, I mean, again, what does? I mean, at some point, you have to figure out that kids know what they need to know or don't know it. So what do you do if you don't test them?
Well, I think you do test them, but you test them in a variety of ways. I mean, I think Paul Leather talked a bit about the performance tasks, and I think they're promising. And I think that they can be effective at the local level with local school officials and teachers really looking hard and critiquing and evaluating what the students are doing to get them towards the final score on the test. The problem is it's very difficult to use assessments like that to make any comparisons across districts and across states in any kind of reliable way. I mean, I think some people may remember the Vermont experience with developing writing and math portfolios. Teachers embrace them. I was working in a school at the time in Vermont, and we absolutely loved the portfolio assessments of math and English language arts because of the effect they also had in our teaching. But from the state's perspective, they ended up throwing them out in the 90s because they weren't reliable measures of student learning across districts, because there were too many other factors that influenced or perhaps went into the score that you really couldn't control for.
And Paul Leather, your thoughts on Warren's concern, and I can see where he's coming from. Do we lose that magnifying glass that No Child Behind gave us if we seek this waiver?
I thought Warren had some good points, and we really tried to address those points in the waiver. First off, there continues to be a laser-like focus on students' performance in math and English language arts, and for all students and all subgroups. And we'll be continuing to report on that, and we'll be continuing to assess that as we go forward.
So math and reading, his concern, we're still sticking with that.
We're not sticking with that, and in fact, the standards are clearer, higher, and deeper, and more understandable to both educators and parents and students going forward. Also, I want to just mention that if I could just respond to one of Rebecca's comments, because she said it twice now and it may start to stick in people's minds. We have created a system of performance assessment here that is we believe will be, in fact, reliable and valid. We have the National Center for Assessment is providing supports to us in its construction, and there will be a validation process built into the system.
Okay. And Rebecca, go ahead, please.
Well, there's two issues. I'll just take one of them. I think the challenges, and I've been reading, for example, Smarter Balance blueprints. There are two issues that the validity studies that they're doing for that particular test don't address. And one of the most important is looking at they look at whether all the standards are tested, but they don't. And it isn't fully developed yet, so it's hard to even evaluate. And we won't know until the test is in place. But they don't appear to be looking at the weight or the priority given to different standards. And they say that that's a model of policy. Let me give you a very concrete example.
Actually, Rebecca, I've got a couple people I want to get on the air before we close out. So I'm going to hold off on that for the moment. I apologize. But Fred's waiting in Manchester, and I'd really like to get to him. Go ahead, Fred.
Hi there.
Go ahead. You're on the air, Fred.
Okay. My comment is that perhaps the test is accurate, but how it is interpreted is not. If we look at the number of kids in Manchester, for example, that are immigrants, English language learners, and we have to take them into, you know, the test as a whole, that's going to have to skew our scores if the kid just sits there and looks at a piece of paper and has no idea what it means. Another point is I understand that special ed kids in Manchester are also being included in this test. Makes no sense to me whatsoever. I'm not in education, but I have a lot of friends in education. So one of the things I've heard is that these kids will sit there with a blank stare in their face and have no idea why they're having to sit there for hours on end. They don't know what the test is even about.
Yeah, this has definitely been an issue in Manchester. Scott, as I understand, you're from Manchester, correct?
Correct. Both of my children are Central High School students.
So how does the current system and how might a better system address English as a second language, or ESL as they call it now, as Fred mentions, those students who may be, as he says, staring at a piece of paper, not really sure what's going on?
Well, sir, I think one of the things that we keep tossing around here is a test. This waiver and the measurement of teacher effectiveness is no longer going to be just a test on a day, rather looking at a holistic approach of how a student learns and assessing it in a variety of different ways, not just necessarily a pen to paper. Looking at orally, how they orally speak, how they perform in labs, actual demonstrations. So being able to look at and take into account students with English language acquisition issues, looking at the districts themselves and what they bring in. Now, having worked in Manchester, we had many schools where poverty had a great impact on student learning, where home life had a great impact. So this waiver and our new model that's coming out on teacher evaluation certainly allows us to take into account a variety of social issues and personal issues that we deal with in our schools. We're no longer a test that's supposed to fit every kid across the state. Rather, we can go back to our local and evaluate it locally.
And here's another sort of on-the-ground question for you, Scott. So we've talked this hour, you know, Rebecca and Paul, and you have mentioned that teachers need to evaluate more than just fill in the bubble on math and reading, and that teachers need to evaluate not just subject matter, but also what you all called non-cognitive skills like perseverance and grit and so forth. And, you know, all sounds great, but Scott, you know, in Manchester, some of those classes have 39 kids.
Certainly.
39 kids. How is one teacher supposed to keep track of all that when he or she has 39 kids?
Well, I think this is – education should be a partnership. And it's not just between the student and the teacher, but rather a community-wide. And if you're looking in Manchester, what you're seeing there is a lack of a community partnership. Communities need to take value in their education system, and part of that comes with funding it properly. And what you're seeing right there in Manchester certainly is a lack of appreciation of education, a lack of valuing what they want out of it, and therefore they've taken a stand of not putting the financing behind it to keep class size even remotely close to a set of state standards that we have.
Well, and that's the question then for you, Paul Leather. I mean, you can say New Hampshire has local control and we want to make sure this works for New Hampshire, but in some districts, education funding is being slashed. So you can have all the goals you want, but if the local districts aren't funding them, what good are they?
Well, Laura, I think you make a good point, and Scott makes some good points about this. One of the things about this waiver is rather than identifying 73 to 85% of all of our schools across the state and treating them equally, what it does is provide particular focus on those 15% of schools that either are struggling overall or are struggling because they're having issues around achievement gaps. And so we really want to work very closely with Tom Brennan, the superintendent in Manchester, as well as the mayor and the school board there. We understand that providing a public education in an urban environment is a complex task, and there are many, many factors involved in that. We met with Tom Brennan yesterday, and we're going to continue to work with him very, very closely. Commissioner Berry has put a real commitment to working with Manchester so that we can support them in offering the very best that they can do. They are doing some innovative work in one of their schools, the Manchester School of Technology. That might be one of the most significant example of a transformed public school and high school in the state. So we want to help the teachers and the students in Manchester and support them, at the same time recognizing that it's a complex environment down there. I also want to just quickly touch on one other issue. Part of the waiver does allow for an assessment of English language learners' ability to read prior to their taking the assessment. And we are submitting that as part of this application because we do recognize what Fred had to say earlier, that putting a student in front of a test that they can't read doesn't serve them or the school system.
Wow. Well, so much more to go through, but I want to thank all of you very much for being with us today and starting to tackle this topic. Rebecca Holcomb, it was great to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. I was glad to be here.
Rebecca Holcomb, director of the Teacher Education Program at Dartmouth College, who also teaches a course on education politics and policy. Scott McGilvray, good to have you. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Scott McGilvray, president of the National Education Association of New Hampshire. And Paul Leather, good to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Laura.
Paul Leather, deputy commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Education. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Become a fan of our Facebook page. You can learn more about what we're planning, upcoming shows, get extra links and materials there. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Canoy.